We begin this hour, though, with some real voices from the shutdown. It shows just how dependent the U.S. economy is on the federal government, despite all our free market ideals and rhetoric. A lot of small businesses around the country are feeling it, and we've invited some folks to talk about the economic impact they are feeling this week. With us on the line, Paul Hare, owner of Your Dog's Best Friends in Alexandria, Virginia, Phil Francis, who was recently the superintendent of the Blue Ridge Parkway in North Carolina. He's retired. And our third guest goes by the name of Own. She's the owner of Tours in the Glades in Florida City. Welcome to all three of you.
Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having us.
Hello, John.
All right. So, Phil Francis, let me begin with you, since you're the wide swath of the Blue Ridge Parkway. You were superintendent of the parkway for about 8 years, retired in April. What is the effect of the government shutdown on a road as important as the Blue Ridge?
Well, the Blue Ridge Parkway affects many communities, and also our employees are affected and our partners who work for us along the 469 miles that the Blue Ridge Parkway passes. We pass through 29 counties. We impact dozens of communities who really are reliant upon the tourism trade for their economic well-being. And the busiest time of year is now.
And that's because the fall colors are coming on. It's a beautiful part of the country anyway. What would you say is the interaction between the federal government and the private sector in your neck of the woods there, Phil?
Well, we have a very strong partnership. We work with many convention and visitors bureaus, many hotels, restaurants, gift shops, gas stations, police departments. We have a huge partnership.
And when that partnership is disrupted, that means a lot of people aren't picking up the phone, and the chain of information and making things work gets that much more difficult. Owner of Tours in the Glades in Florida City, Florida, how would you say this federal private sector partnership works in your world?
It's a wonderful cooperation between the parks and the private sector. It's really valued. And it's upsetting to see this happen to our parks, of course.
And when one partner doesn't show up, the federal government, what does it do specifically to your day-to-day operations?
You would not be able to enter Everglades National Park, Biscayne National Park, Big Cypress National Preserve. You just have to experience it on the peripheral. And that's one place where we are lucky. We have a lot of areas peripherally that are still beautifully preserved Everglades ecosystem, but it's just not the park. It's not what the visitors who come to see the park want.
Paul Hare in Alexandria, Virginia, tell me about the federal and private partnership from your perspective.
Well, I'm purely private. We felt the effect of the furlough immediately. We dropped by probably 25 out of 125 dogs that come to my dog daycare and boarding facility on a regular basis every day. And so that's about $1,000 that's missing per day from my cash flow, which is about a third of my payroll.
And these are people who are home with their pets, right?
We're assuming if you're not at work, why not stay at home and play with your dog? That's about the best thing I can think of.
So and I want to ask every one of you this, just how psychologically sort of heartbroken do you feel by the federal government? Do you feel like the federal government has just been behaving badly here, letting you down? This is needless. What's your level of frustration, Paul?
Well, I got an odd perspective in that I worked in the Senate staff at one point, and I've seen this up close and personal. I've seen them unplug the clock on the floor of the Senate while the debt ceiling limit is approached so that they don't actually technically go over it. This to me now makes no sense. The level of vitriol that is being tossed around here, it's infecting this entire process and it's breaking it down. Somehow these guys have to back away from the rhetoric.
And federal workers on the Blue Ridge Parkway, they do their job. Why can't folks on Capitol Hill do theirs? Phil Francis, is that a fair assessment of your own frustration?
Well, I know our employees ask me that a lot. But I'm really also concerned not only for our employees who are out there saving lives, taking risks to serve the public, but this 2 million people come to the Parkway this time of year, spend $50 million. I'm also concerned for the businesses and our partners on the Parkway. We have motels, we have gift shops, we have restaurants. we have a significant chunk of business going on that affects hundreds and hundreds of people. And sometimes these tourist businesses operate on the margins. So any impact, especially at this time of year, it's like closing a shopping mall at Christmas time.
And Owen, give me your sense of your frustration level right now.
Well, the frustration level, when you look at the numbers, $600 million to local businesses and partners if it lasts 20 days. $30 million a day is the revenue lost. The park generates $10 to every $1 the government gives. And for the government to behave like they are, it's the equivalent of two parents having an argument of the quality of the meal they're going to give to their child, and then while they're arguing about it, just not feeding the child. It's embarrassing.
So what's the break point for you? Do you have to close down if this goes on for 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah, we've already lost $8,000, and the repercussions are huge across the board. This is going to be felt even after the parks reopen.
Paul Hare, owner of Your Dog's Best Friends in Alexandria, Virginia, what's your break point?
Well, I don't really have one, not a break point. We keep a good chunk of money in the bank for contingencies like these. So put it this way, the country's going to break long before my company does.
That's not our case.
That makes me feel good. Phil Francis, final thoughts.
Well, you know, I was talking to one of our businesses that operates inside of Great Smoky Mountains National Park, where I also worked and was there during the last shutdown. They're losing $40,000 every day. This is their busiest time of year. We've got to reopen.
That's miserable. Well, Phil, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And Owen, I hope the spring break works a little better for you than the fall is right now.
I hope so, too. I hope they get them open ASAP.
And Paul Hare, we got to get those dogs and cats back.
Yes, we do. We're going to get them in and have some fun.
Paul Hare, owner of Your Dog's Best Friends in Alexandria, Virginia. And we also spoke with Phil Francis, former superintendent of the Blue Ridge Parkway in North Carolina, and owner of Tours in the Glades in Florida City, Florida. Thanks to the three of you, and good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
We would normally today be telling you the latest government jobs report for the month of September, but nope. The survey couldn't be completed. The Labor Department shut down. We don't know the unemployment rate in the U.S. economy or the payroll numbers. And if this shutdown goes on, we won't know the trade deficit, the CPI inflation rate, the GDP, PPI, all those adorable little acronyms that are supposed to tell us what's going on in the economy. Now, besides our small business friends who we just spoke with who are suffering, are those 800,000 federal workers furloughed this week, including the janitorial staff at the Capitol. John Boehner and Harry Reid have to figure out how to clean their own offices on their own, apparently.
You are the best part of me, the best that I am or ever will be.
But we wanted to give you a little scale of what the relationship between the federal government and the U.S. economy actually is in this shutdown week. In many ways, the federal government is one of the best parts of the U.S. economy. The shutdown back in 1995 cost about $1.5 billion for 22 days. This time around, it's estimated to be $1.6 billion a week. NBC News estimates $12.5 million per hour, $300 million per day. Those numbers, frightening, but consider this. You've still got $357 billion in federal contracts being paid, $495 billion in federal grants, direct payments like Social Security and food stamps, $935 billion, $151 billion in insurance, $176 billion in loan guarantees, and $6.2 billion. That's just miscellaneous. And that doesn't even count the money the Federal Reserve is still pumping into the economy at the rate of $85 billion per month. It's all happening. A couple of trillion.
You're the best part of me.
Best part of the U.S. economy?
Yes, you are.
Well, let's hope that federal support is not going anywhere.
The best part of me.
Forget money and dollars. What about people? You know, the federal shutdown has created this divide in the huge federal workforce, essential workers versus non-essential workers. One of the ironies yesterday was that some of the police officers involved in that terrifying and tragic incident with the car and the cops in Washington, D.C., were actually working without pay because of the shutdown. I guess they were essential and non-essential yesterday during the lockdown around the Capitol. But what a badge to wear, non-essential. What does that mean? You shouldn't exist? We'd be better off without you. You're a physical evidence of waste in government, as some of our listeners have suggested. The shutdown shows what we don't need in our federal government. Well, non-essential does not mean non-important. High-level employees in all branches of government, from the West Wing of the White House to Congress, the statisticians at the Labor Department, they're furloughed because of the shutdown, and they're important. How's your self-esteem in this shutdown week? Are you thinking about your own job a little differently? Any stories out there?
Hi, this is Sheila Vasquez from Charlotte, North Carolina. As a teacher, I feel that we are constantly, you know, made to believe that our jobs are not important by the way we are treated in schools, the things that, you know, we are not provided that we have to provide to make sure our students have the education that they deserve.
Yeah, my name is John Martin. I'm a police officer in Louisville, Kentucky, and I consider my job essential, though I realize that there are some members of the community that don't feel that way.
John, Sheila, thanks so much. You know, this goes everywhere in the economy, public and private sector.
Hi, this is Trixie. Some people think that I don't have a real job because I'm a self-employed antique dealer. But my work is important to me, and I simply don't allow anybody to treat it as unimportant. I treat it with seriousness and respect, and I tend to receive that in return.
That's the spirit, Trixie. We got this from Portland, Oregon. If you own a vehicle, my job is essential. I own an auto shop, and vehicles have a tendency to break. There you go. Dallas, Texas. I work for a nonprofit trying to raise money to cure a chronic disease. I don't think any economist would call me essential, but when I interact with kids suffering from this disease, I feel more than necessary. We want to hear you crow about your job. Tell us. What's essential about what you do? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Give us a story. You can always find us at facebook.com/thetakeaway.
Come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.